that yesterday. He is fortunate to be blessed. Let's put it that way. Alrighty.
That's what I thought.
There we go. That's what I got. I just didn't write it down. And then when I looked at it, I reviewed it today. So chapter 2, things are starting to move. David is finally, after years and years of preparation, from the time that Samuel anointed him as a little child out tending his sheep, things are finally going. Now, once again, remember how much time has passed and how much trial he has gone through to be prepared for what God has for him. This doesn't change for any of us. This is how life is. But things happen pretty well. For his life, things start to happen pretty quick here. You know, in the next five chapters, chapter 5 to about chapter 10, things just swoop through. I mean, he just conquers everybody. He unifies the nation, does a bunch of stuff. So cool things are happening. But as we get there, he is still down in the south. The country is divided. Judah, which is the strongest tribe by far, is its own entity. All the other northern tribes are called Israel. They were always split into 12 tribes. Saul sort of unified them, but Saul was a north guy. Saul was an Israel guy. The tribe of Benjamin, especially Ephraim, the northern part, both sides of the Jordan River. Now, because when Saul was defeated, when he died just before this, that part of Israel, the Philistines had swept in to the top, and now most of them are on the west bank, the east bank of Jordan. They're over there. That's where Saul's people are, and that's where they just moved away. The Philistines swept in, they crossed the Jordan and went up in there. So that's where we're at. Then it came about afterwards that David inquired the Lord, saying, "Shall I go into one of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said to him, "Go up." So David said, "Where shall I go up?" And he said, "To Hebron." Hebron's a pretty neat place. Hebron is the highest elevation. Hebron is south of Jerusalem. And where Saul was is north of Jerusalem. So it goes Gibeon, which is Saul's place, Jerusalem, and then Hebron. Hebron is like, I don't know how else to put it, let's just say the capital of Judah. And it's the highest spot in the area, which makes it, for tactics, that's where you want to be. 20 miles southwest of Judah. And at one time, Abraham lived there. If you go back to Genesis and that, you'll see that Abraham lived in Hebron. And also, when they moved in, that land in Hebron was given to Caleb. You know, Caleb and Joshua were the two that went into, in the book of Judges and Joshua, they're the two that went into the Holy Land and said, "Hey, it's everything God said." And everybody else said, "Oh, but there's giants." So those were the two that were blessed. And this was Caleb's reward. So it was good land. I mean, this is prime stuff. And David spends a lot of time in Hebron before the king. So what he ends up, when he goes to Hebron, he becomes king of the south. Now let's remember what David had been doing. He had been raiding all the foreigners and giving gifts and stuff to all the people of Israel in the south. So for years, he's been taking care of these people. David knows what he's doing. It's a political move that pays off right now. They are ready for David. They're like, who else would it be? So he seeks the Lord. He doesn't just go, and this is the cool thing about David. He has all the might. He is the military force right now. I mean, he has a unified band of men who know how to fight. So he could go up and take it, but he seeks the Lord. He says, "Lord, is this what you want me to do?" And God says, "Yes." And he went up there with his two wives, also Ahinoam and the Jezreelite, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. And David brought up his men who were with him, each with his household, and they lived in the cities of Hebron. When the men of Judah came and there and anointed David king over the house of Judah, and they told David, saying, "It was the men of Jabesh Gilead who buried Saul." If you will remember, Saul was killed by the Philistines. They hung his head up, and you know they hung his body, and they took it to the temple. These men of Jabesh Gilead went at night, took it down, and buried it. Well, these were Saul's people, and they were very brave to do so. They had left this side of the Jordan, crossed over, went and got his body, came back and brought it back, and gave it a proper burial. And so they tell David this. Now, understand that at this point, there is still a problem between the house of Saul and David. David's down south establishing a kingdom. Everywhere Jerusalem and north is still Saul's people. I mean, he's dead. His sons are dead. You know, at least a few of them are. And they are still dedicated to, they're his people. You know, that's his family, Ephraim, the Benjamites, all those people are Saul. So when he hears that Saul's people went and got Saul, David is really cool. He just knows what to do. David sent a messenger to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, "May you be blessed of the Lord because you have shown this kindness to Saul your Lord and have buried him. Now may the Lord show loving kindness and truth to you, and I also will show goodness to you because you have done this thing. Now therefore, let your hand be strong and valiant, for Saul your Lord is dead, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them." So David basically tells him, "Nice job, guys. You know, I'm down here, I'm the king now, but I'm telling you, I appreciate what you did for Saul." Remember, Saul was trying to kill him. This is a great political move. This is showing friendship to the people who may be his enemies. It's giving them attaboy from somebody who matters. And it's actually, once again, you could see his political savvy of not letting his anger destroy what is possible. And so many times in our lives, we let our hatred, our anger, our, you know, what we talked about on Sunday, the inability to forgive, the power of forgiveness and what it can do for you. You know, it's what I ended with. What else are you going to do today that's better than forgiving somebody? You know, so that it'll set somebody free. But it not only helped that person, it helps David. And it's a good move. But Abner, the son of Ner. Now, Abner was Saul's right-hand man. He was his captain of the guard. It's kind of strange that Saul is dead and Abner is not. If you will remember, David once chastised Abner for letting him go into the camp and take his spear while he was sleeping. And he says, "Abner, how could you let this happen? How could you let me come into the camp and take Saul's spear? Shouldn't you have been guarding him?" But Abner survives that battle, maybe because the forces were split in two. That could very well be, because it said when he died, the men of Israel that were on this side saw it and fled. So maybe he was... But Abner is Saul's cousin, by the way. That goes all the way back to when we started. That was mentioned. The son of Ner commanded Saul's army and had taken Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. Now, Mahanaim is over even further to the east of Jordan. It's up above Israel and to the east. It's on the other side of the Jordan River, which runs straight down. That's the same place. This may ring a bell. Jacob's Ladder, where Jacob saw the angels going up. I believe that's where that happened. You know the old song, "We are climbing Jacob's ladder"? Ringing a bell to anybody, or am I just making stuff up? But that's where that happened. And it's a stronghold. I mean, it's a fort. It's built on a place. It shows up all the time as a place where people go to protect themselves. It's just a stronghold.
And then the Philistines are south of that, but on that side of the
river. They are, no, they are west of it, across the Jordan River.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they didn't cross the Jordan, the Philistines. Apparently there was nothing over there they wanted. You know, we got what we want. And they just sort of left them alone, apparently. So anyway, so what happens is Abner grabs a hold of one of Saul's sons, this one that's left. And I forget what his name means, but it's surely nothing. It was like an insult that it's like the least likely to be king or something like that, or dumb son or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was not a flattering title, what his name meant, you know. And so Abner sees this void. He's already connected to Saul's family. He is Saul's uncle, if you remember. I mean, he is in Saul's family. And he sees David coming. So what he does is he grabs a hold of this kid and says, "You're the king." Because Abner wants to hold his own political power. And so what he does is he made him king over Gilead. Gilead is Saul's hometown. It's straight across from Mahanaim. And it's on the other side of Jordan. What it's saying is over the people in that area, basically. Over the people Saul was king over, because that's where Saul had his seat at. Over the Asherites, over Jezreel, over Ephraim, over Benjamin, over all of Israel. Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he came king of Israel, and he was king for 2 years. The house of Judah, however, followed David. David had been king down in Hebron for a few years when this happens. I mean, a few years have passed when he actually becomes king. I think it tells us that David was king, I think, about 7.5 years down in Hebron, king of Judah. So this kid is only king up there 2 years. So up there before, there was really nobody was king. He finally, to consolidate power and to stop David from coming up and taking it, he says, "You're the king." So these 2 years that he's the king up there, David had already been king in Judah for quite a time. The time that David was king in Hebron over the... was king of Judah was seven years and 6 months. Now Abner, the son of Ner, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon to the servants of Ishbeth, the son of Saul. And Joab, the son of Joab, remember, is David's right-hand man. Abner was Saul's. Joab is his. They're their warriors. They're their General Patton, if you want to say. Now, this son of Zariah, that is David's sister. If you go back to... So Joab is basically David's nephew. I can't remember where it says it, but in the genealogy, I think in Chronicles, it lists her as David's sister. So he also has a stake in David, just as much as Abner has a stake into the family of Saul. And so the son of Joab, the servant of David, went out to meet them by the pool of Gibeon, and they sat down, one on one side of the pool and the other side. So these two army leaders from each, they show up together, and they're across the pool from each other in Gibeon, which is Saul's turf. So David's men are up there north of Jerusalem, and they run into Abner. I don't know if it's set up, but apparently these two men have a mutual respect for each other, Abner and Joab. They've known each other for years. At one time, they used to fight together before David was kicked out. I mean, they obviously had each other's back. The old Shakespeare's band of brothers, we few, we, you know, all that was there. And so they come across each other. And Abner said to Joab, "Now let the young men arise and hold a contest before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." So Abner says, "Hey, let's let some of these guys fight." And Joab says, "Okie doke." They arose and went over by count, 12 from Benjamin and Ishbeth, the son of Saul, and 12 servants of David. Each one of them seized his opponent by the head and thrust his sword to the opponent's side, so they fell down together. Therefore, that place is called, whatever that word is, which is in Gibeon. Basically, they each pick 12 guys, their 12 best guys, and they says, "Well, let's have a contest." They kill each other. 24 guys die. I mean, everybody dies. They all grab each other, run each other through, and they're all dead. So this solves nothing. That day the battle was very severe. Abner and his men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. So what happens is after the 24 guys die for nothing, everybody looks at everybody else and says, "Well, let's fight. Nobody won this." And David's men prevail. Now the three sons of Zariah were there. Joab, Abishiah, and Ashalel. Now, that's Joab and his two brothers. These are David's nephews. Now, Abishiah, if you will remember, does anybody remember who he is and what he did? Yeah, it's a tough one. He was the guy that snuck into the camp, Saul's camp, with David and took the spear. Remember, he said, "Who will go with me?" And he goes, "I'll go." So this is obviously, these are some tough dudes. And so this is the guy that went in with David into the camp a few chapters back, and they snuck right through everybody and took Saul's helmet and spear and yelled from the mountaintop, "Hey, look what we got." That's the guy that went with them. And then his brother's there. And it says, and all this stuff means something. It says that Nashel was swift-footed as one of the gazelles which is in the field. They're not just telling you that for nothing. Aziel pursued Abner and did not turn to the right or the left from following Abner. Abner looked behind him and said, "Is that you, Aziel?" And he said, "It is I." So Abner said to him, "Turn to your right or to your left and take a hold of one of the young men for yourself and take for yourself his spoils." But Aziel was not willing to turn aside from following him. These guys know each other. Apparently, this brother of Joab has locked onto Abner. Abner's a bad dude. I mean, it's like chasing Mike Tyson. You know what I mean? And he's so fast that it's apparent that he's going to catch Abner. Abner turns around and says to him, calls him by name, and he says, "Don't do this. Kill one of these other guys." That's what he's saying. Because what they're after is their armor and their spear. It's like a prize of war. So what he's saying to them, I don't know, some translations may even say it. What he's saying to them is, "Take his armor. You don't want mine because I'll kill you." He warns them, "Stop chasing me." And this kid is so locked on, and he says, but Aziel was not willing to turn aside from following him. Abner repeated again to Aziel, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How could I lift my face to your brother Joab?" Apparently, there is a strong relationship between Abner and Joab. It's hard to understand. It must be even harder for women to understand this because they're killing each other. It's tough for guys to understand, but I get it somehow. There's that band of brothers bond that is there. You know, we did battle together. You will always be a part of me, but yet we're still going to go to war. But this is just bizarre. You know, stop trying to kill me because I don't want to offend your brother when I kill you. You know, and it's hard to think that one through. Like, well, it's guys, and we're just, it comes with the violence that we live in and the testosterone that comes through us. But this is just a strange, strange, he says, look, once I kill you, how am I ever going to talk to your brother again? You're going to ruin my friendship if I kill you. However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the belly with the butt end of the spear so that the spear came out his back. I love that they always give the details. And he fell there and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to the place where Aziel fell and died stood still. In other words, they honored the place. It was my understanding of that. They all came there and just spent a moment pondering the situation. But Joab and Abishai pursued Abner. And when the sun was going down, they came from the hill of Ammon, which was in front of Gia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. The sons of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became one band, and they stood on the top of a certain hill. So basically, it's a final stand. Now Joab and his only brother left, or have him cornered. Abner is up there with the tribe of Benjamin, which is his tribe, because Saul was from Benjamin, and he is Saul's relative. So he's up there with his family, and it's Custer, you know, one of those deals. Then Abner called out to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the end? How long will you refrain from telling the people to turn back from following their brothers?" Joab said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely the people would have gone away in the morning, each from them following his brothers." Then Joab blew the trumpet, and all the people halted and pursued Israel no longer, nor did they continue the fight. Abner speaks directly to Joab and says, "What are we doing? You know, we're killing each other. You know, we're all Israel. What happened? The fog of war, who knows what." And somehow in this frenzy of violence, his words grab a hold of Joab. And Joab goes, "Wow, you're right." You know, and he just tells his guys, "Go home. You know, this is bad enough." It would be akin to, if you will check the last couple of chapters of Judges, there is a horrible, horrible account there where Israel wipes out the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin means a lot. Benjamin, that's who they're about to wipe out. Now remember what had happened just a generation or two before this. The entire tribe of Benjamin was almost wiped out by Israel because they had raped this woman, this guy's concubine, and he cut her into pieces and sent her out to the, and all of Israel showed up and said, "Hey, send these guys out." And Benjamin said, "No." And Israel said, "If you don't send them out, we're going to have war." And they almost they destroyed everybody. I mean, there was like a few guys left. That's all that was left of Benjamin. So Benjamin had become built back up. And if you remember, I even said that when Saul was anointed, he said, "Me from the tribe of Benjamin," which at that time, there was almost nobody. So the same thing is about to happen here. So maybe that has something to do with Abner's words to Joab, and Joab says, "Wait a minute, we're almost doing it again." Because after Israel had wiped out all the men of Benjamin, they lamented, "What did we do?" You know, they had to go steal wives off of the people. They made them swear before they wiped out the men that "We will never give our daughters to anybody from Benjamin." So when they wiped them out, and there was only like 70 guys left, he said, "Now what are we going to do? Because we all swore that we want to give them our daughters. So how is Benjamin going to become a tribe again?" So they told Benjamin, "Go steal them from anybody who didn't make..." Like these girls, they have a festival. Run down and steal them. You know, and in those days, that's how you got a wife, I guess. Anywho, I would have been stuck with a slow one. That's all I got to say. You know, anyhow. And he says, so he answers, and Joab, "The Spirit of the Lord, I don't know what, but it stops the slaughter." And so they all went home. Abner's men went through Arabah all night, and they crossed the Jordan and walked till morning and came to Ahimaim. So they had crossed back over the river, and they went home to where Saul's son was. Joab returned from following Abner, and he and his people gathered all together. 19 of David's servants beside Ashiel were missing. So they lost 20 people in the fight. But the servants of David had struck down many of Benjamin and Abner's men, so that 360 men died. So they lost 20. Abner lost 360. But this death of Joab's brother doesn't end here. They took up Asiel and buried him with his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem, which is David's hometown, the city of David, you know, all that sort of stuff. And Joab and his men won all night until the day dawned at Hebron. Now, there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. David grew steadily stronger, and the house of Saul weaker continually. The sons were born of David at Hebron. All this stuff ends up being problems for David. All these wives that David has, and this is just listing the wives that he has at Hebron. When he goes to Jerusalem, I guess the adage, it's good to be the king, you know, and a lot of these are political marriages to cement things. So the sons, well, did we talk about him? No, that's coming up. Sorry. I'll get to that, and I'll tell you why that matters. The sons of David were born at Hebron. The firstborn was Ammon by Hananiah the Jezreelitess. Okay. This is one of the two wives that he had. This is one of the... His original wife was Saul's daughter, Michal, I'll call her. I don't ever know how to say it. This was his next wife, and then Nabal's wife was his third wife. So this is the firstborn. Consider this, he comes up again because he ends up being killed by his other son, Absalom, because he raped his half-sister, Tamara. Absalom cared for his sister and never forgot it, and ends up killing this kid because he raped his sister. And then, not that he just raped her, he raped her and disgraced her, and he just turned away from her. I mean, he could have married her, and Absalom, so... All of this, the tragedies to come because of, well, Dave, what David did. And his second, Chileab, whatever that is, we never hear from him again. So it's assumed that he dies young because everybody else gets mentioned, even in the chronologies. And when there's the fighting and the infighting for power, he's not even heard from again. Better, he just didn't care and he went on his own way. You guys do what you want to do. I'm going fishing. By Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. And the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, M-A-A-C-A-H, Maacah, the daughter of Telem. Oh, anyway, this guy is the king of Syria. What would be Syria right now? Which matters because he took a daughter from the king of the people north of his enemy. What he did when he married this woman is, this king is the king, well, we'll just call it Syria instead of Geshur. So now what he has is, he has an ally above Ishbosheth. And so he's down below, and his father-in-law is up above. That one matters. And Absalom is a big player in what comes up in the future. Absalom, there's a whole, I mean, he is a major force in this book a little bit later. The fourth was Adoniah, the son of Haggith. The fifth was, whoever that is, the son of everything. And the sixth was that other guy, and by David's wife, Eglon. And these were born to David at Hebron. This is just what he has. So he has six sons. We're not mentioning daughters at this point. He has six sons just in Hebron. He was in Hebron 7.5 years. He has six sons in who knows how many daughters that aren't mentioned here. And it came about that there was a war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and that Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, and Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" Okay. So how this happens is, once Saul's dead, concubine was a step below wife. you didn't have, you were taken care of, but you didn't have inheritance rights and things like that. Yes, you produced sons and all that sort of stuff. So, basically, it's never said whether Abner actually did or did not. But the accusation is made. As Abner is becoming, it's that little caveat, Abner is becoming more powerful. Abner is pretty much running the show up there. Now, through this, he may have just took this concubine to be his own, which was a huge no-no. One of the major insults of insults is taking someone's wife or concubine and having relations with them. Like, once somebody's overthrown, the first thing they run in and did is have relations with all their concubines and wives and say, aha, you know, and like, you know, which what it was. And, you know, it's just like sticking your tongue out of them. This is an insult, and Ishbosheth has the nerve to confront him. He still has enough power to say to him, dude, who do you think you are? Then Abner was very angry of the words of Ishbosheth and said, am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? Today I showed you kindness to the house of Saul your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have I not delivered you into the hands of David? And so he said, and yet today you charge me with a guilt concerning this woman, which makes me think that he didn't do it. Or he's saying, I have the right to do it. I'm not sure. It doesn't tell us. What he could be saying, dude, you know, your dad's dead, you know. So it's one or the other, but anyway, he gets really mad over this. May God do to Abner, and more also, if the Lord has sworn to David, I do not accomplish this for him. So what this is, he turns to him and he threatens him. He goes, you're in trouble. To transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul to establish the throne of David over Israel, over Judah, from Dan even to Beersheba, from north to south, the entire country. So because he makes this accusation against him, Abner stands up and says, you're done. After all I've done for you, this is what you've done. I haven't turned you over to David, but you know what's going to happen? David's going to get it all. And he says it right out in the open, and there's nothing this kid can do. Well, not a kid, he's 40. But there's nothing this guy can do because Abner's too strong. And he could no longer answer Abner a word, because he was afraid of him. Then Abner sent a messenger to David in his place, saying, who is the land? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you to bring all of Israel over to you. He said, good, I will make a covenant with you, but I demand one thing of you, namely, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see me. Abner sends message down to David. I'm tired of this kid. I'll serve you. We'll unify the country. Dave says, absolutely. That'll work. That's cool. However, none of this is happening until you bring my wife down. Several reasons. One, the insult I told you about of losing your wife to somebody else. Saul gave her to someone else. Two, it would help think about it. She is Saul's daughter. If David has her back as a wife, it unifies him with Saul's people. He has some sort of a grasp on Saul's people that at least say, well, it's Saul's son-in-law. This means something back then. I mean, we still elect people on their name, don't we? I mean, because it's somebody's son that we knew. And I mean, isn't it? But back then it meant even more because it linked them to the tribes. So once again, David is extremely politically wise. And I think it's both. I think he wants to right a wrong that was done to him and take the insult off of himself. Somebody else is sleeping with his wife. And also to unify, to give him some standing. Because those people up there, there are still people up there that are still loyal to Saul's son. He said, David sent a messenger to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife Michal, whom I betrothed for 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And we remember that. And Ishbosheth sent her and took her from her husband, from Palatil, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping as he went, followed her as far as Bahurim. And Abner said to him, go, return. So he returned. David is bold enough to send a message. He doesn't tell Abner to do this. He sends a message up to Saul's son and says, I want my wife back. This would have been his sister, by the way, at least half-sister. I'm not sure if it was 100%, but Saul was both her father. He says, I want her back. And Ishbosheth says, okay, either because he's afraid or he knows it's the right thing to do. Now, this dude who they just show up and say, hey, we're taking your wife, Well, he knew what he was doing. He knew this was David's wife. This couldn't have been long in coming. I mean, David was one bad dude, the scariest dude in the place. And you have his wife. He's fortunate. All he got was go home. But apparently he was desperately in love with this woman because he follows along the entire time crying and whining. And finally, Abner has enough and says, dude, go home. It's over. It's not changing. So the guy turns around and goes home. Now, Abner had a consultation with the elders of Israel, saying, in the times past, you were seeking for David to be the king over you. Okay, this is the first covert move. Abner gathers all the elders of the northern kingdom, and he says to them, listen, times are changing. Abner has a lot of power. They're listening to him. And what he says to them, in the past, you guys wanted David to be the king back in the day before Saul started chasing him around. Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by my hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the land of... Abner quotes Samuel's prophecy. He conjures up the words of Samuel to the people of the northern kingdom. Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin, which is, this is the tough sell. This is Saul's house. This is the tough sell. Abner doesn't care. Abner must be strong enough at this point that he's not worried about anybody in the north. And he said, in addition, Abner went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel under the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner sways everybody. He gets Benjamin to come on board, which is the big sell. I mean, that's the hard one. That is, you know, Abner's from the tribe of Benjamin, but so is Ishbosheth. He's from the tribe of Benjamin. Then Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron, and David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. Abner said to David, let me arise and go and I gather all of Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may be king over all the soul's desires, all your soul desires. So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Remember, when he says Israel, he's talking about the northern kingdoms at this point. We're not talking. So what he's saying is, he goes and talks to all the people, especially Benjamin, gets their okay. He comes down, talks to David, says, hey, they're all on board. He said, let me go back up and cement this deal. I'll bring the people down. And Dave says, go do it. This is basically all that happened. Now, Ishbosheth is not having a good time at this point. And behold, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoils with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away. He had gone at peace. Right after he sends Abner north, Joab shows up. They were out raiding, doing what Joab does. And as he comes back in, he's told what happened. That Abner was here. He's going north to get everybody to unify the kingdom. Now, I want you to think about this. Abner could very well be making a power play for the kingdom coming, for the unified kingdom. Dave, this is what I'm bringing you. You know, he's looking for a position. He's looking for the position who has Joab. So there's obviously some issues here. Abner killed Joab's brother, and it appears to Joab at this point that Abner's making a play to be the right-hand man. Joab ain't a guy to put up with that sort of thing. When Joab and all the army returned, and all the army that was with him arrived, they told Joab, saying, Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and he sent him away, and he is in peace. Then Joab came to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why then have you sent him away, and he's already gone? You know Abner, the son of Ner, that he has deceived you, and to learn you're going out and coming in, and to find out what you're doing. So what he's saying is he just come down to spy on you. Then Joab came out from David. He sent a messenger after Abner, and they brought him back from the well of Sirah, but David did not know it. So, Abner comes out, he yells at David and says, dude, what are you doing making a treaty with this guy? This is the guy who was trying to kill you. He's just checking us out. And without David's knowledge, he sends messengers to track down Abner and says, come on back. You know, we got something to say. When Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the middle of the gate to speak to him privately. There he struck him in the belly so that he died on account of the blood of Ashiel, his brother. Joab kills him. Just ends the issue right there. Now, realize the power that Abner was going to bring to David. this is a real problem between David and Joab at this point, because he had sent Abner up. If you remember the movie The Godfather, where there was all those times where they were going to get what they wanted in Las Vegas, but there was always the one guy that was standing in the way, and he says, just put up with him because it's good for the family. That's what's happening here. He goes, yeah, I know he's a rat, but he's bringing us what we want. Well, Joab does something he's not supposed to do. He goes and kills this guy without David's okay. Afterward, and believe me, this is probably the second most powerful man in Israel, and he's just been murdered. This is like the vice president being killed or the speaker of the house. I mean, this isn't just a guy who died. This has national implications. So the people from the north know that Abner went down to make peace with David, and Abner was murdered. They killed him. Think of the implications for David nationally. He comes down as a peace emissary, and they murder him. These people don't know who killed him. They just know he's dead. So this is a big situation. I mean, things are bad. Afterward, when David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are innocent before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. So the first thing he does is he proclaims in public, I didn't do this. May it fall on the head of Joab and all of his father's house, and may there not fail from the house of Joab one who has a discharge, or one who is a leper, or one who takes hold of distaff, or one who fall by the sword, who lacks bread. So basically, he says, let the curse fall on Joab. When the bad things come from this, let it be on him, not on me. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle of Gibeon. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, tear your clothes and gird on sackcloth and lament before Abner. And King David walked behind basically the funeral. When they buried Abner at Hebron, the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. The king chanted a lament for Abner and said, should Abner die as a fool dies? In other words, not in battle as a hero, just being bushwhacked, basically. Hey, come here. And then being, you know. Your hands were not bound, your feet were not put in fetters. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. And all the people wept again over him. Then all the people came to persuade David to eat bread, and it is still day. But David vowed, saying, may God do to me, and more also, if I taste of bread or anything else before the sun goes down, which is the period of mourning. Now all the people took note of it, and it pleased them, just as everything the king did pleased all the people. This was really big. It was a public display of affection for Abner and for the people of the north. David saves the day with this. This going out and wailing and crying, refusing to eat, publicly grieving, which is a big part of the culture. I mean, you know, I mean, it's that public display. And he denounced something wrong was done here. That, what he does here, once again, a fantastic political move, but rooted in who he is. Remember, this is the guy who wouldn't kill Saul. This is the guy who killed a guy who come and said, you know, I have Saul's stuff. And he said, well, I'm going to kill you. You know, this is important to David. And how he acts here saves the day. Because everybody hears, nah, this wasn't David. This wasn't a trap where he lured Abner down and then had him killed. Look how he's acting. This saves the kingdom. This is a big move. So all the people and all Israel, big word, understood that day that it had not been the will of the king to put Abner, the son of Ner, to death. The king said to his servant, do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel, Abner? I am weak today, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zariah, are too difficult for me. May the Lord repay evildoers according to his evil. He does. We will see that God does not let this pass. This gets dealt with also. Joab gets dealt with. So what he's saying is, these men, the sons of Zariah, which is Joab and his brother, they're a problem for me. Unlike the king of the north, David is strong enough to handle them. David is still a bad dude, and everybody knows it. And we'll wrap up there. Let's pray. Excuse me. Father, we thank you for your word. Let it find a home in our hearts. Let us learn from it, Lord. Let us see what you want us to see. Let us learn the lessons. And when we learn those lessons, Lord, just let them help to change our lives. And when it changes our lives, it affects this world in a positive way. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.